penitentiary because of their early release program. You know, that this jail space shortage has gotten a lot of publicity, and I don't want to beat that to death tonight, but we could come here and just cite all kinds of examples of burglars, serious felons who are not booked into jail. Last week, a particular case got quite a bit of local media attention. It involved what we would describe as a mid-level methamphetamine laboratory person, a person who was making several ounces of speed per day in his residence laboratory. We developed a case against this person, served a search warrant. He turned out to be an ex-convict with several felony convictions. In his home was the lab. We dismantled narcotics, three long-barreled weapons, one fully automatic weapon, five small handguns. The person is given a citation because there's no space in this jail in this county. Now, this was given a lot of media attention. This is a typical, if not daily, weekly example of what goes on in this county. And these are the kinds of things that undermine what I call operational effectiveness. We can't take the serious felons and criminals off the street, and it equates to the livability and the safety of the community. Basically, that's what I wanted to share with you, and thank you.
Mrs. Bauman, question?
You couldn't bump one of those 15-day PVs?
No,
hold.
We were unable to do that because of the priorities established by the jail and who they had incarcerated at the time. It's not uncommon for even burglars to be cited in lieu of custody.
So the priorities for the jail give a 15-day PV hold priority over a burglar or...
I can't speak to that particular issue. I don't feel knowledgeable in that area. But yes, it is my understanding that there is certain authority to hold and incarcerate these people, parole violators.
That seems like more of an issue of a local policy discretion than it is a matter. I mean, that is going to continue if that's the policy of the local jail. That's going to continue regardless of what the legislature does. So I mean, there are some things that we should take the heat on, but there are other things that I think need to be placed in a
You're right,
kind of
and I would just ask that you please ask. I know you've got corrections and parole people here. Please pose that question of them.
Chief, I'm wondering if I've heard some frustration on the part of Portland police officers that, you know, even when they go to somebody who's been victimized, and, you know, do you sense on the part of your force that there's a frustration amongst the officers when they deal with a public who's been victimized in what we would say is a robbery or burglary?
Yes.
That they can't say there's very little that can be done, and does that seem to become more endemic? And the governor recently mentioned that he was concerned about that almost becoming a cultural attitude that we have to try to do something.
Well,
about.
I think it's terribly widespread. I'd like to also share with you a theory I have, which I think is shared by a lot of my colleagues, and that is that while the burglary rate has remained relatively constant the past year or two, we've seen the larceny rate locally skyrocket. I think that's a reaction to the thieves and criminals that they absolutely know they can run up a string of larcenies, a string of car clouts, if you will, or larcenies from automobiles, and never get booked. I mean, that is absolutely a guarantee. And it's a question of, I think, finding the path of least resistance. You can be a successful thief, attack cars, and virtually know you'll never be booked. Whereas there is a chance you'll be booked if you commit a residential burglary. And the profits from stealing from cars and vehicles are just as lucrative.
Mr. Springer?
This is somewhat off the subject, Chief, but as long as you're here, are you aware of any changes, or are you going to be making any suggestions in terms of our theft by receiving or the fencing laws at the state level? Is there anything we can do at that point to try to curtail, I guess, the secondary market in these kinds of products?
I'm not aware of any proposals that we've brought forward.
Thank you.
Chief, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate that. We're going to take just about a five-minute break, hopefully. There are some sign-up sheets over here for any of those who wish to testify that we don't otherwise have on the list. I have several people on the list, but please do that. So we'll take a five-minute break and be back. Call the committee back to order. Is it order? Is that what we want? Is it order you want to come back
that's
to?
That's what you think you can get.
That's what we think we have. Say Cornbrook.
Record, Cy Cornbrook, President of the Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers. I'd like to speak briefly on 2437 and then on the combine my testimony, if that's the Chair's pleasure. A couple of misconceptions on 2437 that I don't want to go. We do place detainers for 15 days, but we don't do them. At the present time, there's two ways we place them, or three really. If the police make an arrest, it's a fairly serious charge, usually an assault of charge. They notify us. Under those circumstances, we'll place a detainer. If a person has been absconded, we don't know where they are, and there hasn't been a warrant issued yet. We maybe have requested the warrant, but it hasn't gone through the process. And that person is in, we'll place the detainer until we can find out what the circumstances are, where they've been, what they've been up to, that kind of thing. And the third way is if somebody is really a problem, we go out and we find out that they're into things, that they're into serious criminal activity, into serious violations, we will arrest them and lodge them. But we aren't doing that very lightly. For the most part, if there are things like somebody has used drugs or even arrests for thefts or citations and things like that, we are not generally placing detainers. There has to be some serious threat at this time because we're really aware of the jail space situation and the limitations, and that if we place a detainer, that means somebody else can't be in there. And, we do know what is going on, so we are aware of that. We place them in fairly serious cases. One of the problems with a parole detainer is, under the law, the person has a right to remain in the community where the violation was committed for the hearing. That was in Morrissey v. Brewer, so that you just can't ship somebody out of the area and still give them the due process because they have the right to have witnesses at a parole violation hearing and that type of thing. The other thing is that traditionally people have always received county jail as a condition of probation. If you don't do that, what you do is you force a judge to make a decision, prison or probation without any sanction, and sometimes probation is very suitable, but the judge feels that there's a sanction. Now, we have supported the system similar to what the governor is proposing of some minimum custody centers close to urban areas where sentenced felons could be sent to serve those county jail sentences as a condition of probation, hopefully close to the communities where they're sentenced. The thing that concerns me, I have the same concern, that the sheriff expressed on this bill, is the financial impact right now, that unless those centers and that space is online, all we would be doing would be taking the money for that out of another section of corrections, basically. So while we were fixing the bandage on the cut left wrist, we'd be cutting the right wrist. And I'd like to see it as a cohesive plan that goes along with the with some space for them. Because I agree, I think that the jails should be used, that the maximum custody jails should be used for those serious people who are awaiting trial. I think the other problem is, and this is that you're going to have to clarify, even in the long run, is what happens for the person that we do have on a parole or probation violation that has to remain. Do we then, are we going to charge the state? Is the state going to say, well, our budget is low, don't ever lock anybody up on a violation, don't protect the public, leave them on the streets? And, you know, those are questions that I think should be answered. But I think we'll have an interim, probably, unless we get a lot of money, to answer those kind of questions and work out some sort of cohesive plan. As far as the Corrections Division situation, I have supported taking it out of the human resources. I have felt for some period of time that Corrections is the only agency in human resources with totally involuntary commitments, that because of that it doesn't really belong in that system. It's an agency whose only goal is protection of the whose only real goal is protection of the public. Its clientele is the public, and that what we do for the people committed is in furtherance of that goal, unlike the other agencies in DHR. I have also urged before this committee and the interim committee that Corrections be split into a division of field service and division of institutions. Nevada has that system, and legislative research has checked with Nevada, and that has worked quite well. I would have those administrators appointed by the governor. I would not have them appointed by the director of corrections, who would be a coordinator. Those would be appointed by the governor, so that the governor would have the control over those agencies, except that he would have somebody who knows field services running field service, somebody who knows institutions running institutions. I think that there's, over the long haul, there's enough problems and there are enough differences between field management with parole and probation and institutional management that you're better off in the long run with somebody running institutions than those institutions. Somebody running the field that knows the field. And this is not just an observation based on experience in this state. I'm on the board of the American Probation and Parole Association. I see what is done in other states. I've worked in the state of California, Department of Corrections. And I know that those problems are very similar all over the country where you have an integrated department. The tendency is to impose institution solutions on field problems, and I don't, my personal opinion is that doesn't work out very well much of the time. And I think under the system that I'm proposing that we would have a much more efficient delivery of services. I would have somebody to coordinate budgets and communicate with the governor's office, but have that administration operational responsibility in the hands of separate administrators.
Any other questions? Just the administrative managerial one very quickly. I want to make sure you're saying that you have some legislation.
Yes, it should be up from LC. It was supposed to be today. I apologize. Okay.
And that would propose a separate department but with separate field and institutional divisions, and that the heads of those would be both appointed by the governor.
Right, would be within that department, yes. And the heads of those would be appointed by the governor.
Okay, so, thank you very much. Paul Snyder?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the subcommittee, my name is Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. I'm appearing this evening in support of House Bill 2437. I don't wish to repeat the testimony of other witnesses who have made some of the points that I think are important from our perspective. I'd just like to touch briefly on a couple, though, that I think are of substantial significance to us. We share the feeling of the Portland Police Bureau that jails historically have been institutions that are intended to provide for incarcerating pretrial detainees and sentence misdemeanors. People who are intended to be incarcerated on a post-conviction basis for a short period of time. It's also our view that that situation has gradually changed over recent years, substantially in response to the dynamics that Judge Ellis mentioned. In other words, I think that there's a problem that's been created as a result of reactions by the state to prison overcrowding problems and to related issues that have placed sentencing judges in the position where when they view a particular defendant and they feel this person ought to spend a particular amount of time incarcerated or a certain amount of time under active supervision, that the only appropriate choice in that situation is to put the person in jail as a condition of felony probation. And that's the option that's being used more and more and more by sentencing judges, and it's a factor that we believe is substantially exacerbating the problems of jail overcrowding. The judges can accomplish a couple things by sentencing a person to jail as a condition of felony probation that they can't otherwise accomplish, one of which is to provide for a longer term of incarceration than the person might actually spend in prison. Another is to provide for active supervision for up to 5 years. And the third is to maintain control over the situation that involves that particular defendant. We've testified before the subcommittee before to the effect of the existence of jail overcrowding lawsuits. By our count, there have been about 22 statewide. These lawsuits have followed a particular kind of pattern. The results of the lawsuits have also become pretty much predictable, one of which is to substantially reduce the capacity of the county jail, the second of which is substantially increase the operating costs of the county jail. And one of the factors that drives those lawsuits has to do with the type of offender who's in the institution and the length of stay that the person is there. At one extreme example, if a person is going to be incarcerated for only 2 hours, basically all you have to do is provide them as a place to sit. If the person is going to be incarcerated for a year, there are a number of things that constitutional requirements compel be provided to that person. Outdoor recreation, indoor exercise, medical attention, psychological attention, and a number of factors that jails just simply weren't designed to provide as a substantial part of the dynamic of sentencing felons to county jails, it becomes more difficult to provide the services to the institutionalized people that are required constitutionally. I'd like to just react to a couple points that were raised by previous witnesses. Judge Ellis, I believe, has two of his three points suggested that, first of all, in examining criminal proposals that come before the subcommittee, that fiscal impacts ought to be provided or ought to be considered or ought to be solicited before a decision is made as to whether or not a particular bill ought to become a law. I'd strongly endorse that concept, not only fiscal impacts but organizational impacts. The Corrections Division has, I believe, for two sessions now, endeavored to provide those impact statements to the Judiciary Committees. And the Association of Oregon Counties has, to the extent that we can, also tried to do that. I believe the Oregon Jail Overcrowding Project is willing, at the request of the committee, to also provide that kind of information. With respect to fixing priorities, Judge Ellis's other major point, this is one of the purposes of one of the measures that the Jail Overcrowding Project has come up with in the form of sentencing guidelines. We haven't stated in the past clearly or even ambiguously what the purposes of the system are supposed to accomplish. And until that's done, it's very difficult to figure out whether or not it's actually measuring up to what it was intended to do. Sentencing guidelines would provide for equity in terms of sentencing people similarly situated to the same type of incarceration, the same type of sanction. They'd also provide a means by which to manage these scarce resources in the form of institutions and other corrections resources. Finally, I'd just like to mention, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, what I heard when Jim Hennings testified a couple weeks ago before the subcommittee. What I heard him say was that he urged that before the subcommittee or the full committee of the floor pass any new legislation that relates to the creation or enhancement of penalties for particular types of criminal activity, that the subcommittee should first convince itself that a couple things have happened or definitely will happen, one of which is to convince yourself that there's not already an appropriate penalty for that particular kind of activity somewhere else in the criminal code. The second thing that I heard him say was, please don't pass something like this unless you're convinced that the resources to prosecute and provide the sanctions for that kind of activity have been provided by somebody. And I think that that falls pretty much in conjunction with the comments that Judge Ellis made, and I would endorse both those recommendations to the subcommittee.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Are there questions? We seem to have you in front of us a lot, and I expect to see you a great deal more, but we appreciate your coming up,
Paul.
Thank you very much. Mr. Toombs? Tom Toombs?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Toombs. I'm with the Corrections Division. I'm here to talk about 2333 and to advise you that the governor is supportive, obviously, of that bill. He introduced it. There are some amendments which he will be offering to it, or we will in his behalf, that have to do with the creation of the commission. Discussions with him recently, he's concluded that we will retain the advisory board on what was community corrections, broaden its authority to cover all correctional policy making as done by the department, and separate and apart from that, we'll be working with the legislature to create a commission for planning as it relates to the development of a master plan on corrections. And also need to assure you that his intent is in no way to otherwise alter the structure of the existing criminal justice council. He sees that body as a body which should continue to function and feels that there's enough work for all the groups that exist to continue working on. And we'll be making an effort to examine ways as time goes by to coordinate and facilitate communication between those groups, but is not interested in undoing or remaking the system in that context.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Griffin Schreier?
Tom, just briefly, what's the time frame in terms of when you think those amendments, and maybe not quite a section by section analysis, although there are over 200 sections. I understand a lot of them are conforming language. I think that kind of brief summary, when you have your amendments ready before us, would be very helpful.
Mr. Chairman, we have the amendments prepared. I would like the opportunity to meet with you and subcommittee chairman, Mr. Burton, to talk about whatever strategy you'd wish to utilize that's most expeditious to accomplish that end. The bill as it's written, as you point out, is large in significant part housekeeping bills to ensure throughout the statutes, wherever reference was made to the Division of Corrections, or in some cases there were language which existed back to the days when institutions were responsible to the Board of Control that hadn't been corrected. So we saw this as an opportunity to do some house cleaning on statutes that hadn't been cleaned up for probably 20-some years. So the bulk of those we can identify for you. Those that have policy questions, we'll be able to highlight for you. And of course, with your discretion, you could focus on those policy issues as opposed to that housekeeping activity.
Tom, I don't know if the governor's had a chance to review with you his exact position on 2437, the AB, or the felon responsibility, but I don't know if it's possible to ask you to distinguish at this point the policy set aside from the funding issue. We know the funding issue is one that's going to take some more work, obviously, but in terms of the policy that the state should have the responsibility for those folks, are you in a position at this time to state the position of the Corrections Division or the Governor's Office on that thrust?
The Governor's indicated philosophically that he identifies with the concern being expressed by those that have testified in favor of the bill. He does think that the timing in terms of dealing with it must be phased in some fashion because of the dollar implications. And equally important is to look at other ways that statutes or proposals such as those being advocated by OJOP, other groups, might have a bearing on the ultimate cost factor associated with that, consideration of limitations and selective utilization of it as it relates to the management of Class C felony offenders by comparison to A's and B's and so on. So he says, as he did when during the campaign, that he's supportive and sympathetic to the issue and need to look at it together in hopes that that can be a part of this continuing examination of some of these larger systemic issues. But questions whether or not the money would be available now, and if it were available, it would be at the expense of other proposals that he feels, based upon all the input that he's had from people of concern, at what price, what would have to go, I guess, in favor of dealing upfront with that problem.
Tom, just a quick one. In terms of the ABC felon issue, can you give us a ballpark figure in terms of whatever your book population is, or those within the institution, approximately how many are from Multnomah County or in the different A, B, or C felony
category? I should be able to, Mr. Chairman, but I can't off the top of my head, but I'd be glad to get you that information.
Thank you.
Ms. Toombs, thank you. We'll be seeing more
okay.
of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Mr. Watson? Bob Watson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm here as a staff member of the Oregon Jail Overcrowding Project. With you, the hour, and already well stated, I think, positions on this bill. I would only limit my comments to this, that the project conducted a survey or did an analysis of a survey of probationers in the state that were under, males that were under probation supervision in 1984. A statistical sample was taken of that group, and we found that 50% of the people on probation had jail as a condition of probation. So it's a substantial number in the state that received that sanction from the courts. This was not a 100% sample. It was counties that we felt would represent the practice of sentencing in Oregon. Also, and the only other fact I can share with you tonight, is that the average sentence of those felony probationers was 112 days, so it was just under 4 months that the courts were sentencing those individuals to jail. The project believes that jail should be short-term detention, and the question of funding and all those other matters that are before the committee certainly are a separate issue, but the project believes that short-term detention is the purpose of jail and that the felons constitute a serious workload problem in a time when they're very crowded.
Just quickly, Bob, can you tell us the other counties which this problem poses a significant impact?
No, but I can certainly get it for you, Representative Springer. We have a, it's very difficult to get jail statistics that over time can be compared. So what we've done is called on certain days and found categories, and I could certainly share the most recent one with you, but it is a significant number that are there as sentence felons.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've seen them soon, Bob. Thank you. Dave Adams?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dave Adams. I'm from Salem. I wasn't prepared to really speak this evening, but I feel like there's a couple of issues that I would like to just bring before the committee. I've been involved in the corrections planning process for a number of years and helped work on the CCA Act back in 75, 77. I served for 3 years on the State Advisory Board, and our goal was to try to implement the act. So I had a chance to see each county as they came into the act and how they spent their funds. I would like the opportunity to come back with information, if I could, especially about Multnomah County from the very beginning up until now, the dollars that have been expended, where those dollars have been spent. Because I believe part of the intention of CCA was to provide each county the flexibility to develop their own plans. And without going into this evening, because I don't have the figures in front of me, I'd like to come back some other time and present that. I would just like to respond, if I could, to HB 2437, probably in opposition. I feel like we'd open a can of worms. Most of the other counties have developed programs tying in sentenced felons with jail time, restitution time, and then time in the community. The crisis is really in Multnomah County. If you look at the other large counties, I'm from Marion County, and we've developed our plan. As the mayor, our mayor spoke this evening, we're funding a new, brand new jail, 250-bed. So we really have a plan within most communities to use the jail, and part of the CCA funding formula was to allow funds to come to the county to be used for those individuals in jails. Multnomah County, ever since I can remember, has come down each session and asked for funds. I remember Don Clark many times coming down with his handout saying, we have a crisis, we need things. I agree with Multnomah County. I believe there's ways to attack the same issue by CCA funding dealing with the felon question. So I believe there's ways to do the same thing without passing a law. I believe the impact on other counties, including my own in Salem, would just be a whole new change for the way we address the things we're doing in the community. CCA really approached the idea that we keep the Class C felons in the community. At the time the governor's task force did their study, 74% of the people going to state institutions were Class C felons. The average stay was about 12.7 months in the state institutions. The plan